Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. It was 75 years ago this month that C.S. Lewis's eerily prophetic and dystopian novel, That Hideous Strength, was published. And today on ID the Future, we're pleased to bring you the second and concluding part of a documentary about Lewis and his thoughts on scientism as he wrote it in that novel and in other works. The documentary is The Magician's Twin, C.S. Lewis and the Case Against Scientism. In this second part, we hear again from John West, Jay Richards, and Michael Eschleman, and this time they're joined by scholar C. John Collins.
Another example of science-inspired gullibility, according to Lewis, was what he called evolutionism, the popular idea that matter could magically transform itself into complex and conscious living things through a blind and unguided process. Lewis's doubts about unguided evolution went back to his days as a soldier in World War I. While recovering from shrapnel wounds, a young Lewis read the book Creative Evolution by French natural philosopher Henri Bergson. Bergson questioned the ability of Darwin's theory to account for complex structures like the human eye through a blind process like natural selection. Lewis believed that evolutionism, like Freudianism, contained a fatal self-contradiction regarding the human mind. According to the Darwinian view, reason was simply the unforeseen and unintended byproduct of a mindless process based on survival of the fittest. Lewis pointed out the key difficulty with the Darwinian account of reason. If my own mind is a product of the irrational, he asked, how shall I trust my mind when it tells me about evolution? In his personal copy of Charles Darwin's autobiography, Lewis underlined passages where Darwin had asked himself the same question.
But then with me, the horrid doubt always arises whether the convictions of a man's mind, which has been developed from the mind of the lower animals, are of any value or at all trustworthy. Would anyone trust in the convictions of a monkey's mind if there are any convictions in such a mind?
What this means is that if natural selection and random genetic mutations gave rise to our intellectual capacities, we should assume that our intellectual capacities are consistent with survival-enhancing behavior, but we should have no especially good reason to believe that we actually know truth or that, you know, our intellectual faculties even have that capacity of connecting with truth as one of its natural outcomes, because that's not what it's designed for. If anything, our reason is just sort of along for the ride with our survival-enhancing behaviors, which natural selection over millions of years has selected. So the implication of Lewis's argument here is that if naturalism is true and the Darwinian mechanism more or less accounts for our faculties, we probably shouldn't trust our reason.
The idea that a blind and purposeless process without a mind can produce things like human beings that have minds and produce moral beliefs and things that sometimes go against our need for physical survival. The idea that a mindless process of survival of the fittest could create such things really was an outlandish one, according to Lewis. How could a mindless process produce minds? And to think that it could really just shows how gullible people can be in the name of science.
3, 2, 1, 0.
The third similarity between science and magic, according to Lewis, is the quest for power.
Magic was about the quest for power. Magicians wanted to have power over the world and over the universe. They wanted to harness the powers of nature and the deeper powers of nature in order to control it. And Lewis said that much of modern science, not all, but much of modern science was actually devoted towards power over the world.
For many people in the 20th century, the power of modern science was its greatest virtue. They hoped science would usher in a new age of peace and prosperity, a scientific utopia.
All curves and plastic, Monsanto's House of the Future is open to the public at Disneyland. The four-wing plastic shell makes a snug and solid five-room dwelling designed for a family of four. And coincidentally, it's a fairly typical family of four that gets first look. A family food center to store atomically irradiated food. A work surface that includes a combination supersonic dishwasher and storage unit. A look at the future. Looks good, eh?
For the scientific utopians of Lewis's era, science was the savior that would allow us to remake our world.
What gets under your skin about research is the attitude of the men in the labs. They work on the principle that nothing is impossible.
You hear that, Bud?
Well, sure, but I don't believe it.
Open your eyes, Bud. The proof's all around you.
And of course, that can be good. Modern science brings us good things. Many things from the microwave oven to the computers to life-saving treatments of modern medicine, which Lewis certainly appreciated. But on the other hand, that tendency to want to control things can bring us the Orwellian state of, you know, George Orwell's 1984. And so Lewis thought that modern science, in fact, was far more dangerous than magic, because magic failed. You know, magic doesn't work at the end of the day. And so it wasn't so dangerous because people actually couldn't use it to control the world. Modern science has the potential that you really can control people. If you find the right drugs or find the right treatments, you can manipulate them. And so if you don't have some other way of protecting and limiting what you do in the name of science, some ethical basis that isn't dictated by science itself that can control it, then you are facing a really bleak future.
Lewis's critique of scientific utopianism was at the heart of his novel That Hideous Strength, which tells the story of a conspiracy to transform England into a scientific dictatorship. The conspiracy is led by a government bureaucracy with the deceptively innocuous name of the National Institute of Coordinated Experiments, or NICE.
I think that That Hideous Strength and Huxley's Brave New World are the two greatest dystopias in our language in the 20th century.
The agenda of NICE in That Hideous Strength reads like a wish list drawn up by the era's leading scientific social reformers. It included sterilization of the unfit, selective breeding, biochemical conditioning, experimentation on both animals and criminals, and above all, truly scientific planning.
A scientific planning that is pretending to provide a new humanity, that is doing away with traditional ethics, that is doing away with all traditional restraints.
Lewis depicts a world in That Hideous Strength in which nothing is sacred. Daniel Bell has told us that the essence of modernity is that nothing is sacred. In The Abolition of Man, and also in That Hideous Strength, we see the consequences of a world in which nothing is sacred, which includes the human person. The human person is not sacred. And when that happens, there are no distinctions between individuals, or humans and animals, or humans and vegetables, or humans and minerals. And we have the kind of thing we've had in the 20th century.
In the two decades before his death, Lewis became increasingly alarmed by the rise of scientific authoritarianism.
Lewis was very concerned by the dogmatic use of science. And that is why he wrote his novel, That Hideous Strength. That is why he wrote his book, The Abolition of Man, where he actually worries and somewhat sort of predicts the rise of a new class of people, of experts speaking in the name of science, who would dictate to everyone else. In fact, by the end of his life, Lewis was worrying about the rise of what he called scientocracy. Government and society that claims to be based on the claims of modern science, but in reality really is based on a scientific clique of a few people who are speaking in the name of science. And maybe they are adopting the majority view of science, but they're claiming the right to rule based on their scientific knowledge and expertise.
Lewis's concern about authoritarian science seems eerily prophetic. In a world driven by science and technology, those who question the new order, like C.S. Lewis did, increasingly find themselves labelled anti-science. C.S. Lewis would have rejected the charge.
Lewis did not accept the idea that science was a special form of knowledge that was somehow immune to inspection, that was somehow cordoned off from the non-specialist assessing the deliverances of the sciences. Lewis was well aware that, first of all, that there's no such thing as science as such. There are sciences, and each science has its particular methods and its particular areas of study. And also that the science says to be good need to interact with one another, but they do so by means of the larger tools of good rational critical thinking, and so that the things that the scientists say are subject to review by everyone who is able to think well, to think critically, to think rationally.
Lewis did not deny that scientific expertise might be necessary for good public policy in many areas, but he insisted that science alone was not sufficient.
Knowing, say, how things work, knowing how cells work, or knowing how ecosystems work, doesn't tell you what you ought to do for your society. Because public policy is not just about the technical expertise of how things work, it's about what good is worth having at what price. And as C.S. Lewis pointed out, on these questions, a scientific training gives you no added value. Scientists are not moral philosophers, yet political and social judgments involve not just how do things work and how can we make them work better, but how should we act, and what's worth spending money on, and what's worth doing, and what freedoms are worth giving up or not. And on these sorts of moral and ethical questions, someone's science training doesn't give them the right to dictate to the rest of society. C.S. Lewis thought that science was a good thing, but he also thought that it held some really strong dangers. The biggest danger really was the penchant to control. In a scientific view, if you think that is the only way that we have knowledge of the world, and so if you think that if I have the scientific truth about something, that's, you know, end of story, I know everything, that really tends to feed a power trip. Whether you're a scientist or you're a politician who's trying to latch on to the prestige of science, you really have people who are going to abuse their power because they think, look, we're the only ones who know what should happen because we know how the universe really works. Therefore, we should be able to dictate what our cultural beliefs are. We should dictate what our government should do, how we should design governmental programs. We should dictate all manner of public policy, and that anyone who doesn't have a scientific training or isn't part of the consensus view of science is basically stupid or against progress or against science, and so should be really swept by the wayside and shouldn't be listened to. And I think Lewis thought that that almost totalitarian impulse was really a dangerous thing. Lewis, I think, was properly so frightened by that potential within science. And that's why he stressed why we really need a way to understand the limits of science, and that there is something behind science, a larger transcendent ethical sphere behind science, and that we aren't just blind matter in motion, that we're part of a designed universe that actually sets limits on what we should and shouldn't do.
It's an age-old problem. How do we prevent something good from being twisted for evil ends? C.S. Lewis hoped that scientists themselves would find a way to rescue science from scientism, creating a regenerate science that respected human rights and honored human dignity, a science that would no longer be the magician's twin.
That was the second and concluding half of the Discovery Institute documentary, The Magician's Twin, C.S. Lewis and the Case Against Scientism. Find the complete half-hour documentary at YouTube just by searching for that title. Again, The Magician's Twin, C.S. Lewis and the Case Against Scientism. And please share it on social media. It's a good way to celebrate the important work of C.S. Lewis here at the 75th anniversary of his novel, That Hideous Strength. And if you haven't ever read that novel, I highly recommend it. You can find it at most online booksellers, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and of course at brick-and-mortar stores as well. This has been Tom Gilson for ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.